Kathleen Dunn, you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 6th of January. I think we're going to have some fun this hour. Our guest is Jay Nordlinger. He is the senior editor of the National Review, and he wrote a very interesting article. I recommend that you read the whole thing. My Kingdom for a Safe Zone. And it begins like this. Shortly before Christmas, I posted an item in the corner called The Conductor's Podium as Political Platform. It drew an unusually big response from readers. I propose to examine that response and see what it tells us about our political culture today or about our culture, plain and simple. The item. We'll read part of it. One reason I became a conservative, he writes, many years ago is that the left in my hometown, Ann Arbor, Michigan, insisted on politicizing everything. There was never any respite from politics. There was no safe zone. Politics was infused into everything, and it was one kind of politics, of course, left. This sort of creeped me out, to use a modern expression. So on Friday night, I go to Carnegie Hall for a Christmas concert. The King Singers are performing with the New York Pops Orchestra. Marilyn Horne is a special guest. This should be an evening away from politics, just a little fodder for my next New Criterion music piece, you know? But shortly into the concert, the conductor turns to the audience and speaks about the holidays. This year, he says, Hanukkah and Kwanzaa are overlapping with Christmas. According to what I can find, Kwanzaa begins on December 26th, but never mind. Then we have New Year's Day, and on January 20th, there will be a new beginning for our country. The crowd, of course, erupts into cheers, and then he says, I see I'm not the only one who's ready. They can't help themselves, can they? They can't help preening, saying, in effect, see how virtuous I am. My politics are correct. I am a fully paid-up member of the herd, nothing independent-minded about me. And then he goes on to write about the other things that he has seen in concerts on Prairie Home Companion. And readers have sent him lots and lots of letters about how politics has entered museums and sports and rock and roll concerts, etc. Shouldn't we be not talking about those kinds of issues from those kinds of platforms? Jay is our guest this hour. Our phone number, I think we'll have a lot of calls here, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655 for you to join the conversation. And Jay, thank you very much for being with us this hour. It should be a good one. Thank you.
Well, it's a real pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. You talk about this fact that there's not a sense of public space. What kind of public space do you want, and where has it been invaded in the most egregious ways?
Well, I think there should be what I call safe zones. You need a break from politics, from Bush bashing, from any kind of politics, I think. And, you know, I like politics. I'm a political journalist.
Yeah, right.
I've chosen to make a career in this. But I also think that there's a time and a place. And sometimes you just need a break. And I think if you go to a concert or the theater or a mixed dinner party, let's say a politically mixed dinner party, or church, or temple, or a funeral or memorial service. I mean, it's hard to lay down hard and fast rules. In fact, you shouldn't. But common sense should guide, and a sense of tact and propriety should guide. And also, I think, sensitivity to minority feelings. Now, I gather, you know, I live on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. And I've always lived in what I call left capitals. I'm from Ann Arbor, as you've mentioned, and I've lived in Georgetown, D.C., and Cambridge, Mass., and now I'm on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. So I'm used to being in a minority. I grew up that way, and, you know, I like it fine. And obviously, the majorities around me are on the left. They're very anti-Bush. They despise Sarah Palin and say so openly. They're against the Iraq War, et cetera. Fine. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all grown up, and it's a free country after all. But I do think there ought to be these safe zones where you can go to, for example, a Christmas concert and not be subjected to a political speech from the conductor's podium. I think it's something that we should expect as citizens. And it's really, it's a matter of manners, I think. And I like to quote something I once heard Bill Bennett say, never confuse what you got a right to do with what's right to do. Hmm. And of course one has a right, but is it right? And as I said in that column you mentioned, and this is a little bit extreme, but I don't even care for political bumper stickers, even when I'm on that side. And I wouldn't put them on my car if I had one. As a New Yorker, I don't have a car now. But my idea is that, you know, people ought to be free of my opinions as they pass me or as I pass them, because there's so much politics. Life is just so stuffed with politics.
Right.
It's 24/7. And I think there ought to be these havens. And the last thing I'll say, I know I've babbled on for a minute.
No, it's fine.
You know, I grew up with this expression, this was my time and place, the personal is political. And that's one of the things I rebelled against. I thought, no, that's not right. Not everything is a Republican or Democratic. Not everything is conservative or liberal or right or left. There are some things where, you know, why can't we just let our hair down and relax and just leave politics out of it for a minute, for the duration of a concert? And I think musicians tend to be particularly bad offenders, and I make part of my living as a music critic. Maybe I should have said that. That's why I spend so much time in concert halls and opera houses. And I think that musicians are big offenders for this reason. They don't have words unless they sing. And so they can't propagandize, they can't express any sort of opinion. What they have is notes. And they kind of chafe. So what musicians do is they cheat. And so in between pieces, they turn to the audience and I think, uh-oh. For example, Daniel Barenboim, the Argentinian-born conductor, did it the other night before a New Year's Eve concert. I think this was in Vienna. I'll have to check it. He made some speech against the Israeli operation in Gaza. He just can't help himself. He just can't. And a lot of times, you know, these people who may know a lot about music aren't so hot on geopolitics. But they have to sound off anyway. And I'll say one more time, sorry for the repetition. Sure, they got it right. I just don't think it's right.
It's
and it spoils an evening for the minority.
Well, and it's also interesting, as you say in the piece, that it assumes, I think, on the part of the conductor or whoever, that people in the audience, all the people in the audience agree with them and expect that, and they expect a rousing cheer. Isn't that interesting?
And they
do get it, right.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they get it because liberals have not had much to cheer about for 8 years. You talk about this possibility that they feel that they got to go overboard now because they were very depressed for a long time.
Yeah, I can understand that entirely. And, of course, the Republicans had 8 years of Clinton and so on, and
right.
Everyone gets his shot. Everyone
right.
takes his lumps in the political Democratic game. That's Democratic with a small D. For sure, but again, it's a sense of propriety. It's a sense of decorum, and I'm against gloating. I'm against you just shouldn't go out of your way to make others feel bad. Is my idea, and there's a certain groupthink that takes over, a herd mentality mm-hmm, mm-hmm. that I dislike. I heard Michael Tilson Thomas, the famous conductor of the San Francisco Symphony, do this in Carnegie Hall at the beginning of this season. In fact, it was the opening event, and he made a kind of political speech, and the crowd just roared. And it was, as I said, it was almost North Korean in its unanimity. And I just thought, and you know, I would feel even more strongly about this if it were done from my side, if I saw conservatives and Republicans doing this and making liberals squeamish and uncomfortable and so on. I would think that was just so horrible, and I would leap to correct my own. You know, I would be mortified because, you know, one of my own camp, so to speak, were doing this.
Well, that's interesting. Well, what do you think when you hear somebody like Rush Limbaugh? Is that okay because you know that's his forum and he's expected to do that? It's what he does for a living?
Well, I guess that's why you tune into him.
Right.
You know, if you tune into the Rush show or you click on Jay Nordlinger or Open National Review, by golly, you get what you paid for, what mm-hmm. you asked for. You know, and if I go to the Nation magazine or the Village Voice or, dare I say, NPR, I expect a certain something, and it's buyer beware. But if you go to a concert to hear some Christmas music sung by the King Singers or Marilyn Horne, you know, you just think it might be an hour and a half away from the anti-Bush stuff. And yet it may not be. And that's what I think is so disappointing and wrong. As I say, I'm a political journalist. I like to mix it up. But for heaven's sakes, you know, we're not totalitarians. Not everything needs to be infused with politics.
Right. And it's entered the world of sports. I don't spend a lot of time, my family does, but I don't, watching ESPN. But you write in your article about their writers unable to discuss any perceived strategic or tactical error without comparing it to some alleged mistake of President Bush. That happens?
This is what readers tell me. People read the ESPN website, and I myself don't. But I will say this. I find sports writers offenders in this area, and for, I think, a pretty obvious reason. I think some might be slightly embarrassed that they write about sports, which I think is a wonderful way to spend a life, spend a career. So they may have to tell people, you know, I'm more serious than this. It's not all, you know, baseball and basketball and hockey for me. let me sound off on politics, see what a political thinker I am, and let me take these jabs and see how cool and hip and with it I am. And I notice a lot of overwriting in general in sports, overwriting. Also, if I may, I've always noticed this in jazz criticism. And I think it's a way of, I think people find a way to say, you know, this may be my main gig, this is what I do for the living, but boy, I can't stand Bush, I can't stand McCain, I can't stand Sarah Palin just as much as the chief editorialist of the New York Times or the Boston Globe or the Los Angeles Times. I think there's some of that attitude, and you also see it in Sports Illustrated, which beginning, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, got just soaked in politics, soaked in politics. And that's not something I grew up with. There was, it may be too far to ask for a strict separation, because obviously there's blending and blurring. But I do think there ought to be a certain separation, different spheres. And if you want politics, go to the political pages. If you want sports, go to those. If you want music, go to those.
Mm-hmm. What is I don't listen to Car Talk. I shouldn't say this because I work at Wisconsin Public Radio, but I just don't. I like cars, but it's and I know it's an enormously popular show. But one of your readers pointed to asked this question: do they? Why should a show about car repairs include attacks on Republicans? They do that. Do they attack Republicans?
They're the most delightful guys. They're so funny. And
they are.
Smart.
Yeah, they're funny.
And they have the most marvelous banter. But yeah, they can't help themselves. They can't help themselves. And you know, when people do this. Of course, Garrison Keillor makes a specialty of it. Do they alienate part of their audience or potential audience? That's fine. It's their right. You can't please everyone. But it is kind of a shame because a lot of people, maybe a minority, would like to enjoy these shows, a Prairie Home Companion or Car Talk or a concert or an evening at the theater or something. It'd be nice if everyone could just enjoy them. And, you know, something just occurred to me. I didn't put this in my article, but, of course, you get a lot of political stuff at the Oscars. Including from the host, from the MC.
Right.
And it's almost always anti-conservative, anti-Republican, you know, whatever. Everyone expects that. I remember one year, I haven't watched him in many years, but Steve Martin was the host. He was perfect. Everything was so crisp and amusing and funny and, if you will, ecumenical, or maybe it's better to say non-denominational. You know, he said nothing that could offend an R or a D, a lefty or a righty. And I thought, boy... there's my kind of Oscar host.
And how were the ratings?
Good question.
Were they okay?
Don't know. Good question.
We're going to welcome phone calls. You will be happy to know, Jay, that all four phone lines were going after your first two sentences. So we'll see what's out there. We'll
probably
see.
After your first sentence.
We'll take phone calls at the moment. Our number is 800-486-8655. Jay Nordlinger is our guest, senior editor of the National Review, and we're talking about his wonderful article. I think it's worth a read, and we'll get rolling on what we found in it in a moment. My Kingdom for a Safe Zone. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to phone calls now for Jay, and we will start our calls with Dave from Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. Hey, what an interesting show. And my first impression was, oh, not another right-wing whiner. But then I stopped to think, and I thought, you know, I agree with this guy.
I can whine with the best of them.
We listen to Prairie Home, and there are times when I think, geez, Garrison, don't do that. Or Keith Olbermann, who comes from ESPN, of course, has gotten just so tiresome with his right-wing bashing and so forth. But I had an example of this. It depends on where you are in the country. We were with my ship reunion group in Nashville, and one of our tours was to the Grand Ole Opry. And one of the entertainers was Ricky Skaggs, whose music I have always enjoyed. And this was just prior to the 2004 election. And we had all paid $35 for our tickets. And Ricky Skaggs, midway in his act, put in a plug that we should all vote for George Bush. And I've never heard Ricky Skaggs since without remembering that. And I still enjoy his music, but I agree. I wish that people would just leave that alone, particularly if you're in a place where you've paid good money for a ticket.
Well, there's a title of a book I like a lot, and the title is Shut Up and Sing. And often I feel that way, and I know just what you mean.
program. It's very timely, and I appreciate it.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for the call. Krista from Milwaukee. Hi.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
In listening to your conversation, I agree that unless your business is politics or religion, don't mix business and politics or business and religion, you know, no matter what side you're on. But at the same time, I don't remember any of this whining and rancor, and it's not just from him, it's from other people, when the Republicans took over from the Democrats. I mean, when you're in power, you can say whatever you want, and other people whine, but I don't remember this much angst when it was the Republicans that were in power.
Jay.
Well, I myself didn't observe any of this in non-political spheres, at least where I live. I didn't observe any Republican triumphalism from the concert stage or that kind of thing. I just haven't seen it. And I'd be glad to hear, you know, counterexamples. And we just heard one, which I found very interesting, about Skaggs. But I'm not aware of this. And as a previous caller said, it could be a function of where you live. I mean, I've never lived in anywhere but liberal democratic citadels. So I don't know, frankly. But I'm as Ross Perot once said, I'm all ears.
And he is.
Thanks, Krista, unless you want to talk more. Okay, thank you. Our number is 800-486-8655. I think that some of the best, and maybe it's one of the reasons that Saturday Night Live was so successful this past year, maybe they do a little bit more humor that's directed toward conservatives, but they're pretty much equal opportunity offenders. And I watch that show and I see what they do with McCain and what they do with Palin and what they do with Obama and what they do with Biden particularly, and find all of it quite funny. I want people to make fun politically of everybody.
A good point. And you might say that's the comedian's role. And a comedic show, that's a different kettle of fish.
Okay.
That's a little different from what I'm talking about, but it certainly relates. I haven't known Saturday Night Live to be such an equal opportunity offender or poker fun at, but I haven't watched it in a good while, so if you say so, I'm happy to hear it.
Yeah. The other thing I think...
I loved Will Ferrell. I haven't tuned in much
right.
since.
Yeah, well, maybe it's over now.
But
though.
I do know
maybe
about
you missed
Tina Fey
it.
And Sarah Palin, and I thought Palin showed a lot of gumption to go on that show.
Right, she did. But there were a lot of things about her and about Alaska. We just didn't know very much about Alaska, and you got to admit, there was a lot to laugh about. The moose, all of that. It's funny.
I'll grant you the comedy shows. Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And it seems to me, and I'll go back to phone calls, that some of the political shows become much less funny when people start taking themselves too seriously. There's something about people becoming full of themselves, and they think they're funny, and they're not funny anymore.
Yeah. Nothing can kill humor like pomposity.
Exactly.
Quite so.
We'll take that away from this hour. Okay.
Right, if nothing else.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Krista, for your call. Let us go next to Marty from Sister Bay. Hi, Marty.
Hi.
Hi.
My computer just dialed the phone number here, so let me just disconnect that. I'm a music critic with one of the Gannett papers, and I'm a classical music critic, actually.
Oh.
And I'm calling because I really disagree with what the gentleman is saying. I feel that that politics has always been part of the fabric of arts for actually hundreds of years. Mozart, Beethoven, many composers infused politics into their work, and that continues today with John Adams, for example. And I feel my main point I want to make is that the arts cannot exist in a vacuum. I know I saw the concert with Daniel Barenboim, and I understand what you're saying, but I think that the arts has always been a vital part of our life, and I think to say that politics should never, ever be infused with music or art or theater or whatever, I think is just a mistake.
What about conductors saying things during a break of the symphony or before the symphony? Would you find that offensive or not? Out of place, Marty?
Not particularly. I mean, I think that this kind of thing, you know, Barenboim does use his stature as a conductor to make, you know, he makes his comments, and I saw that the New Year's Day concert. It did not bother me. He's very passionate about what's going on there, and he's a very important person in the musical community. And I think to answer your question, no, I don't. It doesn't bother me. And I've actually been to concerts where that has happened, and
sure.
And I feel I understand what the gentleman is saying about the fact that we want to go to a concert and we want to be relaxed and not bothered and all that stuff, but I feel that politics just cannot be separated from what's going on in our world.
Mm-hmm. Jay,
I think that's very dangerous, actually, and a bit of a slippery slope. And leads into a kind of society that we wouldn't want. I don't think we suffer from too little politics. I don't think we have a dearth of political discussion. In fact, I think we may have an overage. And, of course, there are works of music, works of theater, operatic works, that's the lyric theater, that have politics. That's different from what I'm talking about, politics baked in the cake, as in, for example, a John Adams opera. He likes politics and makes no bones about it. Fine. I'm talking about turning around during a normal concert, facing the audience, and giving a political speech. That's something different. And if Daniel Barenboim and those other people want to express themselves politically, they can do what I do. They can write pieces. They can publish op-ed pieces. They can go on radio shows. I think a concert is something different. And I don't think it would kill us to have a respite from politics for a couple of hours to think about something else and maybe even something higher, like so much music.
Well, I don't agree, but I you know, your opinion versus mine. I just think they cannot be separated from each other. That's my own opinion.
All right, thank you, Marty.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Bye.
Jenny is next from Madison. Hi, Jenny.
Hi. I'm really enjoying this. So, I live in, like you said, Madison, Wisconsin, which is a liberal citadel, and I was wondering what your guest today thinks about business owners using their business as a platform for promoting political views. And I'll give an example. Mm-hmm. A few years ago, my husband, who's in the National Guard, deployed to Kuwait. And there was a coffee shop that we used to frequent together, and like many coffee shops, there's lots of flyers and things from individuals in the windows at front. But this particular day I went, there was a sign on the door that said, no camouflage. Kind of read as no camouflage allowed. And I did not go in the coffee shop that day, and I haven't been in since, because it was so startling to me. Not that those were the politics of that business or that business owner, but that it was kind of in the customer's face. Like, I'm coming in for a cup of coffee and a muffin, and wow, suddenly I'm confronted with a really strong contradictory political view to my own. I believe, you know, kind of what your guest is saying is that while people have the right, is it right? I'm just curious about his thoughts on that.
I agree with you. I myself wouldn't do it. First of all, I wouldn't want to alienate part of potential business. I would want to have all the customers I could, I guess, if I were a businessman. But if you feel you must sound off politically and mix your business and your politics, then you pay the price, I guess. And we as consumers, we can vote with our feet. We can vote with our dollars. There's this entire question of freedom of association, whom you can hire, and so on. And you have to let everyone into your restaurant. That's a whole other debate. But, I see political banners in some shops here in New York. And they're always Democratic or anti-Republican. They're never the other way, at least that I've noticed. Also, I've never heard any sort of Republican or conservative or anti-left speech in a concert hall. I think that's maybe why some people like these speeches, is that they all go their way. But in any case, there's that old line again. You may have a right, but is it right? And if there's another muffin shop in town, a shop that welcomes members of the armed forces, I'd patronize that one, I suppose.
Right. Yeah. And I'm curious, if you don't mind me asking, follow.
Sure.
Do you? I mean, I'm 36. I haven't been around for a great many presidential elections.
Mm.
But I'm curious if this is a new thing, or, you know, business owners have always kind of used their business space to promote their own political ideas, or if it's increasing.
do.
Well, let's leave the colonial revolutionary period and the entire 19th century out of it for a minute. let's go to post-World War II. It's very unusual post-war, very unusual. There's a new polarization. You wouldn't have seen this, for example, with Ike versus Stevenson or with Kennedy-Nixon. Kennedy-Nixon in 1960, there were basically two Cold War liberals fighting it out, you know, vying to see who was more anti-Soviet, who was the greater Cold Warrior than the other. And I think this started with the so-called New Left in the late 1960s, and you certainly saw it in the 70s and in the Reagan era. And we had what some people call a holiday from history between the Cold War and the War on Terror, that is, between the collapse of the Soviet Union and 9/11. But I my sense is that politics is more abrasive now than it has been in a long while.
Now? Do you think even with the Obama administration, it seems to me as though something slightly different is taking place, that we're not, we're seeing few Republicans, more than a few who are not terribly displeased that he's in office. Maybe we're seeing some gloating on the part of Democrats because they haven't had a chance to gloat, but I can see how there was more animosity with the Bush-Gore time than there seems to be now. Maybe it's going to happen, but just because of this guy's style.
Here's my comment on that, and it may not be terribly popular. And in fact, it might be, here comes a bit of a whine.
All right, go ahead.
I think the media set the tone to an important degree, and the media are pleased, by and large, with this election, and they welcome this presidency. And I think that has a lot to do with the general tone in the country. And that may be an expected answer from me, but I also think it's correct. It's also something that has to be really speculated about because it really isn't subject to scientific proof. And there ought to be an era of good feeling for a kind of a honeymoon when a president comes in. Mm-hmm. Of course, George W. Bush was denied that for understandable reasons. I'm not sure Reagan had it the first time. But I take your point. I do take your point.
Thanks, Jenny, very much for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655. Rich from Ripon is next. Hello, Rich.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
A couple comments. One is that I agree with the concept that that the speaker is saying, but I would have believed him to be a lot more sincere had he said it 2 years ago or 4 years ago when his side was the one in the pulpit.
It's been a constant theme of mine. I take it you're not a regular reader.
No,
which you
not.
Can certainly be forgiven for.
Well, and the other thing is that you're saying that you've never seen Republicans do the triumphalism thing. I mean, you're either insincere or you're uninformed.
In non-political spheres? No, I haven't. No.
I mean, I'm living in the heart of Wisconsin, in the birthplace of the Republican Party.
Yeah.
And
along
we
with
see
Jackson,
school
Michigan.
Concerts. We see church things turned into political statements. We stand up and say the Pledge of Allegiance at non-school functions. I mean, it really has permeated the last 8 years that events that you go to, peopled by conservatives, they use that as a forum, and they have been for the last 8 years.
Do you regard the Pledge of Allegiance as partisan politics, the kind of that
well,
I'm talking about?
Well, kids standing up and saying the Pledge of Allegiance in school is one thing. Having everybody stand up and say the Pledge of Allegiance when you're at a concert is another.
Yeah, I agree. It's a little different from what I'm talking about. I'm talking about partisan political statements, but I see what you mean.
Sorry, the Pledge of Allegiance, when you're flying the flag and you're singing songs about, you know, that I'm proud to be an American, those are political statements.
But they're not Republican or Democratic, are they?
I think
aren't
that
they
people
American?
Would interpret that as being Republican, yes.
Well, that says something interesting about the interpreter.
Well, I would disagree. If you were at the forum, you would see what I meant. But I think it's because whose axe is being gored is when it's you. It's what's wrong with saying the Pledge of Allegiance. But if we're the opposite, if we're somebody saying something formulaic that was expressing liberal virtues, then you'd be complaining.
Well, let's explore this a second. What would the opposite of the Pledge of Allegiance be? I think we're talking about apples and oranges here. I'm talking about partisan political pronouncements from platforms that ought not to be political platforms. I'm not talking about generic national expressions like the Pledge of Allegiance.
Well, if you're at a dance recital and they say, let's stop and stand up and say the Pledge of Allegiance, that's, to me, is a political statement. And at least in the area where I live, saying the Pledge of Allegiance and singing the national anthem at non-political, non-partisan events is a way of expressing support for the war in Iraq. I mean, you.
I gotcha. Mm. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Of course, if certain others said this, they might be accused of McCarthyism. People might say, what do you mean the Pledge of Allegiance is Republican?
Hmm.
That would be an incendiary thing to say. But I, as we used to say in the 1970s, I know where you're coming from. I know where you're coming from. And with possible exception of a school dance recital, it depends on this. I would say that I would think that would be a little bit odd at a dance recital myself.
Thank you, Rich, very much for the call. There certainly have been cases, and this has permeated religion for quite some time, where people have said, you know, you need to be careful who you're voting for. We're not going to give communion to somebody because of his or her stand on abortion. There have been instances from conservative pulpits of people telling people who to vote for. I think you would agree with that, Jay.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And do you see an increase in the number of churches who have, or would you say that it's pretty well split, that liberal voices are saying, telling people who to vote for as well as conservative voices in the same numbers?
You mean in places of worship?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a student of that subject. Certainly the black church has been heavily political for many generations. And there are many activist churches in New York and Ann Arbor and other places I've lived in. On the left, they're, peace movement and so on. For example, the famous Riverside Church in New York that the Reverend Sloan, William Sloan Coffin used to preside over,
mm-hmm.
Things like that. And, I read about a large so-called Christian right churches that involve politics as well. I personally like a separation there, but it is certain the business of churches to conduct themselves as they wish, I suppose. I myself wouldn't be crazy about it. But there again, it's kind of like, you know, you pay your money and you takes your church. I have heard stories, well, since I've been writing on the subject, I've heard from a lot of people about funerals and memorial services. And the worst thing I heard was a man died in a plane crash, in his own plane. And there was a so-called celebration of life for him at his temple. And the rabbi said, well, at least he won't have to live anymore under President Bush.
Mm.
And that would be appalling enough,
mm-hmm.
but the thing is, the guy liked Bush, admired him, voted for him, although the rabbi didn't know that because
mm-hmm.
the man didn't talk about his politics. He was there to worship God, I suppose. So, I mean, I do hear stomach-turning stuff like this, and if we really dislike it, and this is a theme I keep returning to, we can vote with our feet.
Right. Leave the place. Walk out.
Yeah.
Have you done that?
I suppose I have. Often when I go to these concerts and other musical events, I'm there as a critic, so I'm forced to cover them. I suppose I have. I mean, I've walked out of movies. We all have. No big deal. I've left social functions early. For example, what would you do if you're in my shoes? This was not long after 9/11, and I'm at a dinner party on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. And, you know, they're all on the left because that's what you get. And my hostess says, I think the dinner was really for me, too. My hostess says, we were talking about 9/11. I was talking about the Pennsylvania plane that went down. And I said that, you know, it was possibly destined for either the U.S. Capitol or the White House. And my hostess says, well, I wish George W. Bush had been killed that day.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, if you're me,
right?
What do you do?
Right.
I mean, I was raised in the Midwest where, you know, light and... Do you contradict her? Do you remain silent? Do you excuse yourself? Do you make a joke?
Hmm.
And I don't know if I handle it perfectly, but and that is an extreme example, but it's not an isolated example. I've been in that situation a number of times.
Yeah, I think you confront somebody who says something like that. You just confront them.
Yeah. I suppose you do.
Mm-hmm.
You risk making a stink, but on the other hand, the other person has made a stink already.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Mark from Escanaba. Hi, Mark.
Hi there.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just a quick comment here. I've worked in the arts professionally on and off for a few years, and not that I can justify the idea of using the arts as a forum for politics, but I just wanted to express the idea that I can certainly understand where a little bit of that comes from, a celebration of a changing of the guard to a more liberal side, because literally from the artistic side, it's usually the conservatives that are the first to try to either curtail your artistic freedom or literally cut your funding. So I can understand where at least some people on that side would be happy to see that that change happening.
Mm, what do you say to that, Jay?
Well, I tell you, there are a lot of conservatives in the arts, and a lot of them are closeted. And a lot of them contact me because I'm kind of a safe zone myself. They know they can confide in me. They email me. They scurry up to me. Don't tell anyone. I'd be in deep trouble professionally. But, and of course, some of them are out. But you just never know. There are a heck of a lot of people like me, frankly, anti-communists, what we today call conservatives in the arts. A lot of them come from behind the Iron Curtain. A lot of them are Jews from the former Soviet Union. A lot of them are hawkish about the Middle East. A lot of them are simply good old-fashioned American Reaganites. And you'd be surprised. In fact, you'd be surprised. It is kind of interesting. I have no doubt that a majority of, let's say, artists are on the left. No doubt. But there's a healthier political, philosophical minority than I would have suspected, frankly.
Well, I definitely have
friends
on
both sides.
Trust me.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
I definitely have friends on both sides of the aisle, but it seems like whenever you have to go fight that fight down at City Hall, or that someone wants to shut down something you're doing, it's definitely always coming from the right.
Well, I tell you, as you well know, you can support the arts without supporting public funding of the arts. And you can support the arts without requiring that your neighbors pay for your own tastes and likes and pastimes. But I know what you mean. I myself was trained as a musician, and I am a Reaganite. And I'm very, very skeptical about the existence of, for example, the National Endowment for the Arts. The NEA, under the leadership of my friend Dana Gioia, is now giving opera awards. I'm very wary about something like opera awards being given by the government. What do they know? Isn't that something that monarchies do and the dictatorships do? But as I say, this is very much a minority view.
Who should give opera awards, then?
Musical organizations.
Hmm.
People who know something. Not people in governmental buildings. Not civil servants. People in the arts ought to award their own, I think. I think it's a little bit creepy for a liberal democracy like the U.S. To have government arts awards.
Let's take more phone calls in a moment. Jay Nordlinger is our guest, senior editor of the National Review, and we're talking about an article that he wrote recently, which you can find online. It's My Kingdom for a Safe Zone, in which he looks at the fact that he thinks we need political safe zones, and this is not only what he has observed, but many of his readers, he really struck a chord with them. The conductor's podium is a political platform, and how political platforms are finding their way into sports and all kinds of places, radio programs, et cetera, where it just shouldn't be. Players in orchestras are talking politics, and shouldn't there be a zone where we just respect the fact that people have different points of view, and what's most important is the music or the sports or whatever. What do you think? 800-486-8655 is the number. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We return to your phone calls. Tom from Green Bay. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi.
This is a nice conservative approach. Anyhow, this goes back quite a ways. I can remember taking my daughter and family up to Escanaba for the state fair up there probably a decade ago to see the Beach Boys. And the Beach Boys, much to my amazement, turned out to be conservative Republicans. And they sat and lambasted Clinton for the entire show. And I don't agree with your attitude. In a democracy, people have voices. Whether they be sports stars, whether they be the musicians singing protest songs in the 60s against the war or against the civil rights movement, things like this. In a democracy, people speak. Now, there may be some inappropriate places, but the silent majority is dead.
Mm. And did you think that was an inappropriate thing for the Beach Boys to do? This was in their conversation?
No. I mean, I'm used to watching late-night TV and everything else and comedians. And, I mean, Letterman's still telling Clinton jokes, for God's sakes, you know, 8 years after the fact. And apparently this guy has a very short memory or not a very long history.
Jay.
I mean, think of all, you know, the civil rights movement. People looked the other way and said nothing. Right?
I'm not against politics, my friend. I'm actually a political journalist. That's how I've chosen to make my living. I just don't think we need to be completely saturated in it. And if I had been at that Beach Boys concert, I wouldn't have liked it very much at all. I guess I was as unsympathetic to the Clintons as it was possible to be, but I wouldn't have liked hearing that at all. For one thing, I would have thought it was unfair to Democratic audience members or pro-Clinton people in the audience. I would have felt uncomfortable for them. And also, I would have been in there to enjoy, California Girls and other Beach Boys songs. And again, I of course, these people have a right. But just the fact that you can play the guitar doesn't mean you know anything about politics. And I don't think necessarily gives you, let's say, a moral right to sound off. Of course you have a right. But there's a time for politics and a time for not. And I just hate to be covered in this stuff all the time. I think it's too bad. That's all.
Thanks, Tom, for the call. Ray is next from Milwaukee. Hi, Ray.
I'm a professional stagehand in Milwaukee, and over the last, 12 years, I've probably been attending thousand concerts. Your guest apparently has not been at many country western concerts over the last 8 years because, for instance,
guilty as charged.
Toby Keith, when he played here in Milwaukee, I was offended when he brought on phony military people on stage. If he had brought some real vets on stage, maybe some guys that were injured or gals that had been hurt over in Iraq or whatever, if he brought real soldiers on stage, I would not have been offended. But he brought these phony actors on stage in Milwaukee and all this flag waving. The name of the tour mocked Shock and Awe. It was called Shock and Y'all. So about 95% of country western concerts have been pro-war, pro-torture, pro-Bush. And the guest apparently is attending the wrong concerts. He needs to be hanging out with his own folks at the country western shows, maybe monster truck rallies. But the fine arts are basically funded by liberals. And liberals support the fine arts, and you apparently are really into opera and symphonies. Well, unfortunately, the crowd going there is of the complete different political views you have, and you need to maybe hang out in North or South Carolina or Arkansas and see what liberals are exposed to down there when they attend music functions.
Jay.
I need to get out more. I'd say the audiences at things I attend here in New York are more mixed than the caller might suppose. And I imagine the audiences at those other performances are more mixed than he may suppose. But my position is consistent. I really don't like the mixing of concerts, for example, and partisan politics. I think we've gone overboard. I think people ought to get away to something, be it a country and western concert or a symphonic concert for a couple of hours and enjoy music, to have a break away from politics. They want politics and then go right back home and turn on cable television and have it all night long or go onto the Internet or whatever they want. That is my view, and I really don't care from which political direction it comes from.
Thanks, Ray, for the call. Let's go to Brian from Milwaukee. Hi, Brian.
Hi, the last guy stole my thunder.
Oh, my.
But that's okay. I had a couple of quick points. I'm a musician, and I find myself in front of large crowds now and then. And it's very difficult, if not impossible, to speak your mind when you're in a spotlight and you've got a captive audience. It's human nature. But what I do is I try to get my viewpoints across without mentioning a political party. Like, we do a song, Love is a Rose, and we bring the music down, and I do this little thing. I just say whatever comes off the top of my head, and I speak to the virtues of love and things like that and how to do the right thing. And there's people hungry in the world, and we should feed them, and there's people without homes that we should house, and blah, blah, blah. I go on and on and on. And I don't offend anybody, and I play in a lot of ho-dunk places. And you know, I think you can do this without mentioning a political party. It's common sense. It's common courtesy. But on top of that, the other thing I wanted to say was, talk about politics. The world of arts and entertainment is so political. Whoever has the most money, whoever has the most representation, whoever has the most backing gets the most airplay. Talk about politics. The music world's got nothing on, or the what we call politics has nothing on the music world. So politics is really just another name for influence and who's in the right place at the right time, who's got the best backing, who's got the most money, you know. And like I said, you can get your point across without offending anybody. And again, that country western thing, that guy stole my thunder.
Okay. I'll take my comments. Thanks, Brian. There. Thanks for the call.
Let me comment on one aspect of that, if I may. I think the man said that if you're in the spotlight and you have a captive audience, it's hard to resist pontificating. And I say resist. I have a sense of conscience and public space and propriety and decorum and resist. Now, I wear two hats. I am a political journalist and I'm a music critic. And I do a lot of lecturing on music. And I host seminars on music and so on. And I have what he called the spotlight a lot, or what he referred to as a captive audience, rather a lot. And I would sooner slit my throat than introduce partisan politics into a setting like that. I think it's simply rude. It wouldn't occur to me to do so. And I don't see why this would be such a peculiar view.
We go to Russell from Janesville next. Hi, Russell.
Hi.
Hi.
Sam, my comment is regards to conservative talk radio. I'm 58 years old. I'm a veteran. I consider myself an independent centrist. And living in Janesville here, my radio stations always seem to land on Laura Ingraham or Rush Limbaugh or somebody like that. And I consider myself open-minded. I want to hear what they have to say. But for the last 8 years, it seems like if I didn't buy into the ideology of the Bush administration, I was less of an American, less of a Christian, less of a man, less of a patriot. And it just so enraged me that I always felt like I was on the defensive. I had to defend myself. And it's led to some pretty heated conversations with friends who are right-wing. And I think those radio stations are actually hurting the Republican Party because they just enrage people by offending them with their smug attitudes. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Russell.
Well, it could be. And what I'm for, of course, is diversity in media. And we should all have the opportunity to turn the dial to something more to our liking, or pick up another kind of newspaper, or whatever. Hear what the caller is saying, for sure. But, of course, what we've been talking about in this really fun and stimulating hour is not political shows, but non-political shows that people want to make political.
Let's go to Jennifer next, and from Janesville as well. Hi, Jennifer.
Hello.
Hi.
I wanted to comment that, first, I love this show. I think this is a great topic. And being the fact that I'm a 26-year-old down in Janesville, I am definitely a minority by being a Republican. And, you know, I just think that this is just an amazing show, and I hate to see, you know, I hate to go to fine arts programs and them being politicized as well, no matter what side of the fence you're on. You know, again, the whole is it right, and I just don't think it's fair.
You know, there was a semi-famous, at least well-publicized instance of Linda Ronstadt. Do you remember this, Kathleen?
I think I might.
When she said, if there are any Republicans in this audience, you can leave now, and I don't want to perform before any Republicans.
Mm.
I think it was Vegas, and it was kind of a national story, and, you know, okay. I like Linda Ronstadt. I like Blue Bayou, and mm-hmm. if she doesn't want to sing it to me, that's okay, I guess. I think it's a shame. I think it's a shame, but I do understand it, and I know that people can't help themselves. My main plaint has been, I wish they could. I wish they could show a little bit of restraint. I take a guy like Michael Tilson Thomas or Daniel Barenboim. I've chosen two conductors who mm-hmm. advertise themselves as on the left. They know a lot about music, and they're good musicians, or perhaps I think perhaps less good than they think they are, but that's okay. That's a matter for debate. But why? How do they know more about politics than the average member of their audience? I say they do not. Why do they feel the need to impose their politics on the audience? And I think they do it because I think it's a form of preening. It's a form of boasting. They see how it's a way of saying, see how virtuous I am. And they note that the great majority of their audience, or they suspect that the great majority of their audience, will agree. So it's a kind of a group hug. It's see how wonderful we all are. And there's not a scintilla of bravery in it. There's not an ounce of courage, because they know they'll get nothing but approbation. If it actually cost them something, if they risked something, I might semi-admire it. But it costs them nothing except more thunderous, self-congratulatory applause.
Jay, thank you so much. It was a really fun hour and a good one, I think. Thank you.
You were so good to ask me. May you flourish forever.
Thank you, Jay. Jay Nordlinger, our guest, senior editor of the National Review. My Kingdom for a Safe Zone is the article. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, John Treader for on-air production on the Ideas Network.